Okay, I'm going to call to order the board meeting for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin and the Austin Housing Corporation. We'll just do it all at once if you'll call, Mr. Kirby.
Commissioner Apostola?
Present.
Commissioner.
Commissioner Duncan Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington? Commissioner Bailey?
Here.
And Chairman Ritchie. Mr. Acting Chairman, we have a call.
Have a quorum for both boards, and we proceed. Communication, citizens' communication. We don't look like we have any today.
I don't believe anyone has signed up to speak.
All right, then we will move to the public hearing. I think before we get started, Mike's got some things he'd like to do.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, I think we have some awards that we're celebrating today, and Sylvia Blanco is going to share with the board these wonderful NARA awards that we've received. It's been a couple of years, so it's nice to be back in that business and to have so many honorees.
Yes, by the way, Mr. Rivers, yes, we are excited to share that at the recent Texas NARA conference, we received numerous awards for a variety of publications through our PIO, our Public Information Officer, Ken Bodden, did some phenomenal work on our annual report, as well as our resident newsletter. So for the years of 2020 and 2021, we received the Texas NARA Award for Best Newsletter for Large Housing Authority. And for 2020 and 2021, we also received for Best Other Agency Publications, and that's for our resident calendar that comes out every year. Additionally, we got in 2020 an award for Media Recognition, and that was for our Rosewood, Now is the Time Rosewood video. I'm sure everyone has seen it. It's very powerful and moving. And last but not least, we also received awards for our Maintenance Person of the Year for 2020. And I do want to recognize and call up Philip Santino. Come on up. Maybe bring it over here to the front. And I'm hoping, Leilani, you can do us the honors. Commissioner Duncan Hall, would you like to join in a
quick group photo with congratulations, Philip. Well done for all of your hard work. You're over at the South Properties at Shadow Bend and Mancheck. To get over here. Smile for the camera.
Oh, go ahead.
One. So, Philip, how long have you been with Hawkins now?
Going on 7 years.
Lucky seven.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations. Very well deserved.
Thank you.
And a round of applause. Also, received word that two of our residents were recognized by Texas NARA for Resident of the Year, and we have one of those residents here with us today. The other one had a family emergency, but I do want to call up the 2020 Resident of the Year, Myra Rubalcaba. Home program, and a Chalmers resident, so she is truly working with her peers and her neighbors. So come on in.
Let's take off your mask.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Here we go. One, two.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Well done, Myra.
Appreciate it.
and our 2021 Resident of the Year, who couldn't be with us today, Alexis Henderson. And she has been a staunch leader at Rosewood Court, leading the way on our redevelopment planning. So just if you see her, please share your congratulations to Alexis as well. She's also one of our fellow community health workers and advocates for the Bringing Health Home program. So that's the extent of my report on
Texas Narrow.
Thank you
very much. Thank you. Thanks, guys. Good job. Thanks for everyone's hard work.
All right. I think what we have now is a citywide advisory board update.
And Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Apsol is going to read the report on behalf of Lupe Garcia.
Yes. Call to order was meeting with call to order 1037 by President Lupe Garcia. Presentation, Mike Gerber invited residents to eat to Thomas E. Driven cutting ceremony at 9 a.m. on May 20th. Sharon Harris with Family Elder Care shared resources available to seniors and disabled residents at HACA. HACA Community Development Announcement. Leilani Vimbiegas announced CWAB board positions are filled. Leilani discussed summer program youth program update. Leilani gave Bringing Health Home update. Daniel Reed mentioned Rosewood Home Ownership Program. Murphy Rowland provided workforce development, IDAD and IMOM update. Catherine Clago shared digital inclusion update. New business, Evelyn Holman discussed Senior Mayfest, Fair. Property update, four residents provided property update.
Got anybody?
Meeting was adjourned at 12.09 p.m. And I do have a letter, real quick, from the IMOM program by Karima Ali. She's a 38-year-old mother, single mother of two daughters at Santa Rita, and she attended, and I was there, the first IMOM meeting, and she'd like to share her story, and she wrote this. So it was on March 15, 2022, at Santa Rita Community Room. Ms. Garcia had quite a few people show up, share the resources. One presenter was Austin Urban League, where I met Mr. Monica Irie Foster. Ms. Foster shared information about the AAUL program. I showed interest in the computer support and network specialist program. The next week, I met with Ms. Foster and I became a client. I also shared my passion for wanting to start an outreach program to help individuals such as myself meet their full potential. She then introduced me to the Director of Workforce, Mrs. Sharita Russell, who brought me in to join their five-week internship. After completing the internship, I was an employee at the AAUL on July 12, 2022. By that, I would have completed their Computer Support Network Specialist course. Within the resources of IMOM that Ms. Garcia provided, I was able to network with Ms. Foster and Mrs. Russell. IMOM's opened opportunities for me, and I am truly grateful for the program.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Exciting. Lupe and the Citywide Advisory Board are doing great work, and we appreciate Commissioner Apsol has been a stalwart at their meetings as well. Thanks for all that you're doing.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I think we'll go back on the HACA agenda to the public hearing on Rosewood Court, if, with your permission.
Yes. Well, so, go ahead. I think I opened it, but... Want anybody? Let's go ahead, Mike.
So this is the proposed. This is the public hearing, which is one of the last steps that we'll be taking. This board will be taking on the proposed redevelopment of Rosewood Courts. We've invited the public here today to offer their comments on the redevelopment of Rosewood Courts. We've been working on a redevelopment strategy for quite some time. That's been made available to the public, and they've had opportunities to weigh in. Certainly, they've weighed in with Historic Preservation Commission, with Council, an opportunity with Bond Review Board and with other venues, and we're pleased that in this last iteration of this project, really has brought together the community. So we're excited by that. Would open up to Ms. Blanco if you have any comments specifically on the redevelopment. Otherwise, we'll turn to the public if there's any member of the public wishing to address this board, and then we'll close the hearing.
All I can say is now's the time. So I'm looking forward to the closing and hopefully in late August, and we're off to the races. So that's the extent of my comments. I've had plenty over the last 10 years, so I think that's, so that you know.
Is there any member of the public wishing to make comment on Rosewood Courts redevelopment? Seeing that there is none, we will close your, with your approval, Mr. Chairman, we'll close the public hearing.
Yep, meeting's closed.
And we will move on to the consent agenda for the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. I would mention before we turn fully off of Rosewood Courts, Will Henderson from Carlton Companies is here, and Rosewood Courts will be redeveloped through a partnership between HACA and Carlton, just as we've done at Chalmers Courts, which I know will always be tomorrow. Thank you for being here, Will. You will still see other things coming forward to this board as we do final approvals and get final resolutions, as we do with all deals. You get the final say. So what we're anticipating right now, Will and and when are we expecting final rounds of, when are we expecting closing on Rosewood Courts?
We're looking towards the end of August. We'll bring the final resolutions to y'all, but we put to it at the July meeting.
So the next meeting.
Yep.
Okay. Get excited. Okay. This is the consent agenda. The consent agenda contains the approval of the board minutes for the board meeting that was held on April 21st, 2022.
Consent item, anybody have any discussions or comments? All in favor say aye.
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 The opposed, no. The ayes have it, and we'll pass it.
Just to verify, that was Commissioner Apostolo motioning. Commissioner Duncan Hall seconding. We'll now turn to the action items. And the first item number two is resolution number 2747, a request to submit fiscal year 2021-22 CMAP certification to the U.S. Department of Housing and Human Development. Lisa Garcia, present.
Hey, Lisa.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm Lisa Garcia, the Vice President of the Housing. I'm here to present resolution number 2747, requesting approval to submit the fiscal year end 2022 CMAP certification to HUD. And I'm happy to report this year CMAP again. And as you know, this is something we do every year. We've been consistent with being able to.
Just a comment. I'm happy to see that we again have a score of 104%, which I think is nice.
It's huge. How many years in a row? And 100 plus?
Over
20. A long, long time.
A long time. People my age that
I've
been here.
But it comes with a huge amount of work. Thanks for all you've done.
So if you come in here and you don't have it, that means no bonus for you that year?
Thank you.
Commissioners, we would ask for a motion to approve resolution number 2747. Apostola moves. Duncan Hall second.
Any other questions? Any other comments? Not all in favor, vote aye. Aye.
Aye.
All against, vote nay. The ayes have it. Motion carries.
Commissioners, item number 27, resolution number 2748, approval revised payment standards for the Housing Choice Voucher Program, and Lisa will walk through that issue quickly. But as a quick summary, with the escalation in inflation in housing costs in our city, it's become more difficult for voucher holders to find to live. What Lisa's going to recommend to you is to increase the payment standards in a way that will enable more residents to actually be successful in getting a home.
That's correct. So, yes, we're requesting for approval of resolution 2748 to increase the payment standards to 110% of the published at Monarch. You reviewed this back in November, and we increased it to 105% of the published at Monarch effective February 1st. Since that time, we've been able to review the Austin trend report, which reflects in 2021, January to 2022, January, rental rates in Austin have increased for multifamily about 24%, going from $1,333 average rent to $1,659 average rent. So we are definitely seeing that impact our family, where they're getting in place, they're getting rent increases anywhere from $300 to $500 in some cases. And of course, we're seeing that pressure too. The families are trying to locate a place to move. So for 2021, we issued 711 vouchers and 444 leads. That's about just shy of 63% success rate, which is a lot. We're averaging at 20% turn back. We're at 80% success rate. So that's changed a lot.
And what do you contribute that to?
The lack of affordable housing in Austin. This is a very, there's not a lot of units in Austin right now. Mm-hmm. I think that, as I said before, that we have often affordable housing, that, and we've got close to 1,000 families with vouchers living in those properties now, which is great. But it's still just, the pressure's there. COVID-19, too, there's been a lot of resources that have come into Austin and all over the country as well for rental assistance, and this is the national problem. There's the resources for the rental assistance, but there's not the units, and that's what we're seeing in Austin, pushing that throughout, Western states as well.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I think we have the commitment from recent development partners that we provide 10% affordable housing in a lot of these new properties that we have. And I guess I want to know whether or not any of those units that would be 10% are being used by voucher people, or would that the vouchers would be above that 10%.
So, Commissioner, so 50% of the units are at affordable rates. So 10%, what you're seeing is being reserved for folks at 60%, so lower income. But that's actually that's a newer phenomenon. Actually, at some properties, it's even more than that. And at certain tax credit properties, a very large number of the units are at 60%, and even some are at 30. But we've had a good mix, and Ron, the Godfather's up there. Hi, Ron. Ron had a little exposure yesterday at lunchtime, and so, in the interest of safety, he's going to be in touch with us this way. But Ron, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I just wanted to add. I'll say it out loud, and I'll say it again. And I've talked to our partners as early as yesterday while they were here. One group was here, and I'll be visiting again with our other partners next week. We are committed to do more, and our partners have really stepped up and committed to, as we move forward to make these new acquisitions at a minimum of 10%, and I think we're going to do much better than that, especially with the rise in the AMIs or the FMRs that just came out. We've seen an influx of people kind of fall back that were right on the cusp of that 60 to 80. And now with this 10, 11% increase in the FMRs, we've seen some of them fall even back into the 60. So we naturally occurring, we've created more 60% households, and we're committed to keeping those. But we're also going to do a better effort and a more concerted effort to get our voucher holders into and make them aware that we have the availability. So they're very, very strong, committed. And that's why we keep working with the people that we work with, because they get it. And we know the need. So just wanted to share that with you. We know the need. Lisa shares that with us continuously, and we're going to do our best we can to add to that number.
Any questions?
I guess one of the issues that I still have is that as we get these new properties online, and most of them are about 95% occupied, or a bit higher, what's our strategy for getting like the 10% in for the 60% A and I?
Sure. We market heavily to the voucher holders. So Ron and Suzanne are very much partnered, and our landlord outreach specialists who work within Lisa's division, along with the specialists, the housing eligibility specialists, and others that are working in her division. Everyone's keenly aware of the Austin affordable properties, and those are we give out information about those properties as a first place to go take a look. A lot of folks choose to self-select, you know, and not live there. You know, oftentimes it's not as close or convenient to a job or to school or where they currently live, and they want, you know, they choose something else. But we're seeing the numbers of voucher holders increase, and I would say that the AAC portfolio is pretty indispensable for actually getting. It's certainly by far the biggest landlord participating in Lisa's program, and we would be nowhere near where we are if we didn't have that portfolio.
Well, that's great, and we're going to be doing a lot already, mm-hmm. what Mike described. And as soon as the units become available, the landlord outreach specialist that we have connects with Dan, and we list them. We have a couple Austin ATI. As well as we have one that you see those actually that listed right away there. But additional things that we're going to start doing is monthly meetings as soon as the properties come online. We'll do an orientation, like I'll be there and we'll have staff there. We want to do that as a monthly thing so that we're continuing to educate. Because the new managers, you know, they need to be made aware. And Nancy does that right now. Mm-hmm. Our landlord outreach. Doing it, but we wanted to sort of enhance it a little more so that we can really try to make sure we get the, and also looking at the properties that maybe don't have as many voucher holders, because some have a larger percentage than others, to see what we can do to increase the numbers at those properties. Of course, families still have to choose to live there,
right.
But we want to make sure that we're, you know, being there to really educate the property managers on site, you know, how to navigate the program.
And to know that,
you know, make the voucher holders a priority
mm-hmm.
when they come there to try to.
But people do have choice, and I mean, that's the program is to give them choice about where they live. Mm-hmm. The exciting thing is that, I mean, they're choosing to live with us and to stay, which is great. We want mm-hmm. folks to come find a great place to live at an AAC property and then stay, because turnovers, you know, the more you can lessen your turnover, the less, the better, you know, the better it is, the more stable mm-hmm. and healthy property generally is. That's not, you know, always the case, but it tends to be a general rule in real estate. And so, but yes, as things do open up, we do try to actively, you know, recruit. In fact, we're really working hard now as we use emergency housing vouchers for transitioning homeless, as we use VASH vouchers. We're doing an awful lot of work within Ronshop to try to, you know, make the linkages between those programs, vouchers, and some very hard to serve people, mm-hmm. and getting them into those units. And it's tough. It's really tough. Hopefully, more of our residents will have more success at other properties as well, with the standards increasing. We know we can get a voucher resident in. We've got some flexibility, and we always work with voucher residents on our side, but we also know that when they go somewhere else, you know, people may be off $25 or $50 or $100. So the decision you're being asked to make today will make a difference in enabling to get more of those folks into their units. So we would ask for your approval of resolution number 2748.
Let me ask a question before we do that.
Sure.
Lisa, do you take, if you've got vouchers, and we send it to our affordable housing, do they, how does that compare if you send them to just a regular apartment? Would that be a whole lot better if they can? You see what I'm saying? I mean, if it's already marked down to 60% of fair market value, the affordable housing apartments, and we give them a voucher, don't we save some money that way?
I have to look at them. Each property is different, the rent that they have established.
Mm-hmm.
So I each one should be all the rents are established. We also have to do plans with not steering.
Can't steer, yeah.
Residential applicants to only specific properties instead of the fair housing violation.
Well, then how are we steering them to ours?
We're just, and we're marking them like we're marking all the other properties. We're listing them on the two sites I mentioned. Make people aware of them, you know, that they're available. We're not steering them there. We'll make them aware.
Well, what constitutes steering?
You know, making things, not showing them what the other options are, or informing them that there's other options available besides these particular properties.
So in some way making the resident feel like they didn't have a choice of alternatives. Only showing them the ones in our portfolio, telling them, hey, if you go over and see this particular manager, they'll get you, you know, squared away, you don't need to look anywhere else. It's all in kind of the language. And so we, you know, when folks used to come here, and have come here for orientations, yeah, there was a board, it had apartments, we'd bring in other property owners, came in, it's just harder now with the pandemic to reach folks. There still goes Section 8 and other platforms where people can go and find places. And so we encourage folks to go look at those other places. But we do tell them that, you know, there's several landlords in town, us, Foundation Communities, and others that accept housing choice vouchers, and we would encourage you, and we can provide them with information about tax credit properties as well, and encourage you to go take a look at these properties as well.
I guess I'm really leaning back toward the legal question. Anything? Did somebody say something?
I want you to turn your mic on.
The other thing that's nice about this is that in the past we've asked for flexibility to go up to 105% of the rent. This is a change that we're asking to go up to 110%.
Mm-hmm.
So that increase, that 5% increase, should give a little bit more flexibility to the resident. It'll also provide a little more flexibility to the program in getting more residents housed. The downside is that, say, everyone was able to go out and get housed tomorrow with it. Well, that's good for utilization. But the budget that we have there, you know, so we have to be careful. This is how Lisa gets the 104 every year, is that she is very careful about how many vouchers she puts out, makes sure that she has enough budget authority, and that we're going to be able to cover everybody's rent as necessary, and that we don't go into shortfall. So this is a modesty. This is a good increase. It increases flexibility for the voucher holder, but it's we're being, you know, mindful of the risk attendant with it.
If we reach that risk, if it looks like we're going to reach that risk, can we transfer some of our own our money that's not going to any particular place to
no.
take care of that?
No.
they have established that housing authorities can apply for money if you reach that called shortfall money, and they make it available. And actually, that's the reason the Texanaro conference comes, really encouraging housing authorities maximize their utilization. And they sort of said, don't, okay to ask for money through
shortfall, they sort of said that. So, you know, it's sort of, it don't make you feel like it was falling, but they really want to maximize utilization. So that, so that we would ask us for additional money if we got there. But I forecasted it, but I feel comfortable asking for this increase of 210%. We're going to push it to that 99.9% utilization.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I said no just because it, we'd be taking on a liability in that, but also it's not sustainable, and that wouldn't be if we were to fund it. Although we have organizationally committed, if we ever got in a shortfall, we would cover that debt. So we've been able to. It's nice to have that flexibility to do it, but we've never had to do it, and we wouldn't want to.
So I'm right.
Yes, sir.
Chairman, though.
Yes, sir.
Okay, anything else? Okay, do I have a motion to approve resolution number 2748?
So moved.
Do we have a motion by Commissioner, which one?
Duncan Hall.
Mm-hmm. And a second by Commissioner Apostolo. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Ayes have it. Passed.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Congratulations again on the 104. Really a huge. CBT says going to come up now for the next two items, Mr. Chairman. First is resolution 2748 for roofing replacements and gas in place. There's a second contract for you, which is item five, which is resolution 2750, which is roofing replacements for Santa Rita Courts and Booker T. Washington.
I haven't seen Jimmy in a long time. Jimmy, how are you?
Yes.
Good afternoon to you all. It's great to be with you. I've seen you sometime. Hope you're all well. 2729, not 48, regards the roofing services contract for two of our sites. And while we went through quite a bit of a spell last year with the freeze storms, right after that, you might remember Austin had sustained a lot of hail damage. And several of our sites in the Pathways communities were damaged by hail. So this and the next item is about hailstorm roofing replacements. So 11 of the 16 properties incurred hail impact damages that did qualify for claims without insurance carrier to replace their existing shingle roofing. This project does address only the shingle roofing and not the hard PPO rubberized roofing which you see on some of our flat projects. Two sites, Manchacatoo and Coronado Hills, have already had the work completed over the past year, and now we're in the second phase, when the P&D department will address four large sites. They include Santa Rita Courts, Booker T. Washington Terraces, Gaston Place, and Georgia Manor. The remaining four sites of Meadowbrook, Golden Oaks, Thurman Heights, and Manchacatoo Village that make up the final third phase are planned for later this year. For all sites, we did hire an architectural firm to produce our plan sets and specs needed to advertise and solicit the bids. Now we use the housing agency marketplace online instead of in person. Things have changed quite a bit over the 2 years, haven't they? And the scope of work for all sites is relatively identical, with the full demo and removal of damaged roofing down to the decking and new shingle roofing systems installed back, utilizing our standard requirements for that work. Underlying needs for the decking replacements and fascia repairs, flashing, and other completely related work are completed on a unit pricing basis, which we captured in the bid process. Work at each site will address all the damaged buildings as each property is warranted and includes the Gaston, the full three-story residential building management and office community building, and the bid at $110,993 was our lowest and most qualified bid. And at Georgian Manor, all 38 residential buildings, management, community office building, storage building, mail kiosk, everything else, for an amount of $125.52. That was the lowest, most qualified bid. That bid came in from Cordova Construction Company, and of course we did our reference checks, all positive on them as well. And so we request contract award to Cordova Construction in the amount of $236,045 for both sites.
Commissioner Duncan Hall, do you have a question?
Well, yeah, you mentioned that there was quite a bit of hail damage. Does any of this, or is any of this cost covered by insurance?
Yes, the insurance proceeds will be applicable to all four of these jobs, as they will on the rest of the fall coming later in the fall as well.
Okay. And what percentage is of the cost do you think is covered by insurance?
So I show here that the contributed insurance proceeds on Gaston Place, for instance, We had a low bid there of $110,993. The insurance proceeds, the base insurance proceeds, are estimated at about $75,000.
Okay.
And I've also shown you there the R4R reserve budget that's available for roofing replacements for each of these sites, because there is a line item in each of these sites, 20-year schedules.
Mm-hmm.
So that there is a bucket of money to do the replacements. But we do have contributed money from the insurance company.
Okay.
The only outlier is Sanami, whose roofing was actually 21 years old and exceeds the claim. But we do have a healthy R4R. It was scheduled to have this roofing replaced under the mm-hmm. R4R schedule, reserve replacement, excuse me.
Does insurance require a timeline to have this work completed?
Well, within reason. They knew that it would be difficult for us to do the work like last year. Mm-hmm. It's pretty hard to solicit and get crews out to do this kind of work during the year that was pandemically up and down, up and down. Now things are loosening up a little bit for a little time,
mm-hmm.
and although we may see some waves later, we're able to get back to work now. We do have in our specifications that should local conditions require it, moving crews must adhere to local construction practices for safety and recovery.
Okay. Thank you.
And again, the total for Cordova construction for these two sites, Gaston and Georgia, is $236,035 as the base bid.
Mm-hmm.
We request approval for contract report.
Now, that money that comes from the insurance company, do we have a deductible, or is it not worth that?
Yes, we do have deductibles, and they've been applied. So first, I worked with the insurance company to determine what the deductible was on all of them, and these are the rough base amounts I was given by the insurance company post-deductions.
Yeah, I was looking at my insurance policy, and I thought I only had to pay $500 for my roof, because I'd paid extra for years. They just changed that, so it's not that way if it's hail or windstorm. What else is it going to be?
Right. A lot of change is occurring in the insurance industry because of the recent disasters.
Mm. Okay, any other questions?
Yeah.
All right, then I'll ask for a motion for resolution number 2749, roofing replacements for pathway at Gaston Place and Jordan.
Aye.
Commissioner Apostolo has a
second.
Second, Duncan Hall. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The ayes have it. Motion's passed. Jimmy.
Thank you, Commissioners. Resolution 2750 is the second verse, same as the first. Only this time, the two sites are Santa Rita Courts and our largest site, Booker T. Washington. And of course, in the bids that we took for all these sites, we shook them out to look for the best deal for HACA across the board, and we asked contractors to give us a discount should they be awarded all four sites, but we didn't receive any discount offers. And I think that's indicative that the market's so tight on the availability of shingles that contractors aren't really getting deals on volume from shingle suppliers yet until that backlog settles out, stabilizes. So that's why we're asking for two separate awards. So in this case, same scope, same work. In this case, it was a different company, Precision Construction Company, that did the best for Santa Rita Courts at $244,138, and Booker T. Washington, the largest site, of course, at $593,431. Combined, their package is $837,569. We request award to Precision Construction Company for these two sites.
Any questions? Comments? If not, I'll entertain a motion for resolution number 2750.
So moved.
Second.
Have a second by Costello. Anything else? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Got that one.
Thank you, sir. My pleasure seeing you all today.
Yeah.
Commissioners, with your indulgence, we're going to switch over to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda. Commissioner Bailey, Commissioner Carrington's absent, serves as chair of that, serves as vice chair, and will serve as chair today for AHC as well. We've already been called to order. That quorum has been certified. First up would be public communication. Is there anyone who wishes to address the Austin Affordable Corporation Board? I believe there's any public comment. Turn to the consent agenda. The agenda item number one is approval of the board minute summary for the meeting held on April 21st, 2022.
All right, commissioners, you've heard the presentation. I need a motion for the approval of the minutes. 21st, 2022.
Second.
I have a motion by Costello, seconded by all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nay. Ayes have it.
Commissioners, item two, first action agenda item is resolution number 00204. Resolution authorizing the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to contribute up to $500,000 towards the construction of the community care clinic at Pathways at Chalmers Courts. And Ann Gass is going to brief.
Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Robert. My name is Ann Gass. I'm the director of the Housing Initiative for the Housing Authority. Today I'm presenting an item requesting your approval for a $500,000 donation to community care for the construction of medical and dental clinics at Chalmers South. Most of you were able to tour the empty building at the last board meeting, and we shared a lot of information about the project and some questions, so I'll keep my remarks brief. This 5,000 square foot space over two buildings will provide primary care services, dental labs, dental services, labs, imaging, pharmacy support, care coordination, and case management. As you can see, Commissioner Bailey, I know you were not with us on that tour. I've got a map up there of the location between there at the side of Charles, right along Chick Holland Street. Next slide, please. The clinic will be open 5 days a week, and except walk-ins, 10% of the appointments will be set aside to serve Hawkup families. In addition to building up two preservation buildings, you can see they will be constructing a structure that connects the two building and buildings and serves as a reception area and also helps with accessibility. Construction costs have skyrocketed since we first conceived of this project several years ago. The total cost for this project stemmed to $0.7 million. Central Health is paying the bulk of this expense, but to help offset the rising costs, Aqua Life contributes $500,000 in AAC funds, and we, you know, I think we all share the mission of bringing the importance of bringing health services to our family care public housing project. I'm really excited about this project, and I have a group of local questions.
And Ann, we had originally committed $350,000, I think, to it, and then with the
$250,000, but yes,
increasing it to $500,000 or and by $250,000. Are increasing
a total up to $500,000, and we will be in third. So we're only giving up to what the other partners have given as well, but we're capped at $500,000.
Okay. Questions?
I was thinking about who we're serving with this clinic. I know that you said a certain number would be coming from Chalmers, correct?
Well, our agreement says 10% would be set aside for Hawkup families.
Okay. That's what I was wondering. And do we assume that, given the fact that we are partners are also contributing to this, that they assume this clinic is going to serve the larger population in East Austin, or what are the parameters, or are there any?
I don't know that there are specific parameters geographically, but yes, the intention is to serve that local community.
They remarked how it's intended somewhat to take some pressure off of Sandra Joy Anderson Clinic at Houston Tillotson. I guess there's some other clinics that they are establishing in East Austin, but they really see this as kind of a hotbed East Side clinic, and are going to be doing a lot of affirmative outreach and putting a lot of, I mean, the buildings aren't that big, and they're putting a lot there. Mm-hmm. And so we're excited about the resources that will be available. And I was talking to Commissioner Afsola this morning about a resident, just, you know, how wonderful it will be having it there where someone could just go. They won't go up to Santa Joy. They won't go to their, you know, to the air, you know, to the Ark or to Peoples. But if it's there, I'll take advantage of it, and that's a win.
Mm-hmm.
How many of our people do you think they'll serve? Say 10%. What do you think?
Well, we've got 400 families there once we're completely built out. Then we've got another 100 down at Santa Rita, and we'll have 200 up at Rosewood. So, yeah, I think we'll fill the 10% of the spots fairly easily, and then I think the I think we would hope it would be more than the 10%. I think it just depends on sort of how they market and array their services and, you know, where people are currently getting health care. But I think it's intended for those who particularly don't have a health care home.
And is this Geisland's group that's doing that?
So Central Health is the sort of the main oversight group and coordinates care for and is sort of the central clearinghouse. But community care is the federally qualified health center that is that's the entity of the city for the delivery of the service. So Central Health services the combination taxing, they've got taxing authority, they've got all sorts of other authorities, and they're that structure of the city and the county. So they have other kind of quasi-government responsibilities, whereas community care operates as a business and has, and their business is healthcare delivery to, as a federally qualified health center.
Any other questions or comments? Mary?
Obviously, my neighbors and residents there, I think that they'll be going to see a doctor more often, knowing that it's convenient and being there in the neighborhood.
Well, I know for 20 years I've been urging this, so I'm really glad to see it.
Mr. Absolute, do you have to make a resolution? Make a motion?
Yes, sir. Pass resolution 00204.
Motion by Commissioner Pillow. Anything else? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Not that one.
Jason Fournier, who's the head of community care, is on our speaker's list for tomorrow at Chalmers. Everything else is built out and done, but you'll see construction kind of behind where we are going to do our event tomorrow. That's where the health plan is going to go. And Jason's got to talk a little bit about that. We're really excited about the partnership. And thank you all for your support of the $500,000 contribution. The next item is resolution number 00205 by the Board of Directors of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, authorizing AEHC to execute any and all documents or take other actions that are necessary or desirable to facilitate the permanent financing of Pathways to Richard Place and Services. And this is essentially a refinancing of Goodrich property that's been operating now for a while, a year and a half, 2 years. So we're ready to refinance into a permanent lender and let Ann kind of describe that.
The Washington Square Municipal can save about $50,000 annually in debt service. But let me back up and just remind you, so we closed the TRED transaction in 2018 with a 9% tax credit award, and we redeveloped what was 40 public housing units into 120 mixed income units. As Mr. Gregory, we occupied the property during the spring and fall of 2000, and just recently completed all of our processes with TDHCA to get our 8609 from the IRS. That's the final tax credit document that finishes the tax credit process and gets us going on regular stabilization. And now that we're occupied and stabilized, we want to refinance that original loan to a 5% interest rate with 223F, which is an FHA loan product through Wells Fargo. We are still a few days away from rate lock. We hope to get a rate of around 3.95%, so saving a full point, which is, I said, to save about $50,000 a year. While the resolution before you today authorizes a loan amount of up to $11,500,000, we're looking right now at about lower than that. We're looking at about $10,800,000. Also, with this transaction, we'll be paying off the developer fee, the deferred developer fee that's due to our developer partner, Atlantic Pacific, and this will move down to the project going forward. And additionally, as part of this transaction, Atlantic Pacific Management Company has been managing Goodrich, and we plan to transition from Atlantic Pacific to Carlton Management Services, CMS, is the company that manages Chalmers and will manage Rosewood. So we plan to have them take over July 1st.
Any questions, anybody?
Yeah, one question. Refresh my memory, please, Ann. We're now at Goodrich from 40 public housing units to 120 mixed income. I want to understand better the mixed income concept.
I'll be like that. So those 40 units are have converted from public housing to RAD. So those are still, they're found PVRA units, project-based rental assistance, so still deeply subsidized, residents pay 30% of their income. So those 40 units are still
RAD.
The balance of the 80, we have, of those 80 units, 70 are tax credit units, meaning they come in at different levels of affordability from 80 on down, 80, 60, 50. On down at varying levels. And so there's a subsidy attached, although they can come in with a voucher, you have several voucher holders there. But it's just a rent limit, and they come in with an income limit that they have to meet to be eligible for those units. The balance of the 120 units, the final 10 units, are officially market units, meaning we charge market rates. We kept those market units in the same way we did at Chalmers, because every RAD family has the right to return. And many of those RAD families had been over income. We wanted them to be able to come back. And if it was a tax credit unit, they could. So those 10 units provided some flexibility there. Now they are market units. However, we did self-limit them to 80%. So although on the books they are market units, we had self-limited them to 80%. So every family there is making 80% of the area median income or below. And I will have to tell this story. I was talking to a family the other day. There's a father, and he has a little girl who's in first grade, and he said they moved in recently. She's got Silker Elementary, and her reading level has jumped two levels since she's been Silker. He was so excited to live at Goodrich and to have his little girl in such a great school and a high opportunity. So fun to share those stories when we come.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. Was Goodrich that awful place we had, and we just tore it down and rebuilt it?
Well, it wasn't awful, but they were duplex. You might be thinking about Real Auto, which was awful.
I'm not thinking about Real Auto.
Yeah.
whatever happened to Real Auto?
Sitting on the land.
Goodrich is right off Lamar. It's near Lamar and
Loop
on it. It's in a fantastic location. It's a beautiful property. I hope we'll be able to have you out for a board meeting out there.
Why don't we try to target the July board meeting?
That'd be
Goodrich. That would be wonderful. We were trying to do that, and then we had COVID and other things. So, well, if it's safe, we'll try to do it in July. If not, we'll look sometime soon. But it's very worth going out there. It's a nice property, interesting courtyard designs, but it's two blocks away from Silker.
Yeah, speaking of the courtyard.
There's the courtyard, yeah.
There's a community garden and a barbecue grill, and there's a playground.
Remember where Arch Rib House was?
Yeah.
Right
there. Yeah.
So those are the mixed income units there, or the...
Well, there's no distinction. There's
no distinction.
I mean, they're all the... So there are no single units anymore.
It's just the multifamily property, correct? Yeah, 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms.
And that's actually a huge violation of rules. The property is the property, and it's the unit that's available. So we don't, the smallest units can't be assigned as the affordable units.
Mm-hmm.
And so although there's been an effort to try to change that, but for all of our programs, every unit's in the mix, and it's just the next family that comes along that we try to serve where the unit's appropriate size for them.
That was one of the questions that I had in terms of how do we maintain this 10% commitment on all these properties. Do we say first come, first serve? Do we have square footage issues involved in deciding which unit's going to be?
Floating versus fixed. It's really based on the units that are occupied and whether the family... The units that are set aside, so for example, at Goodrich, we have 40 that are the PVRA RAD units.
Mm-hmm.
So once those 40 have been occupied,
mm-hmm.
then we just refill them, and we typically do have waiting lists
mm-hmm.
for those particular units. And so we
for the public count, what counts? Okay.
And waiting lists for the tax credit units as well.
It just seems like a logistical nightmare to me trying to figure out.
It is, and that's one of the reasons why instead of us instead of us taking the property immediately over, that's one of the reasons why we've outsourced the management of the property, because hitting all the compliance guidelines and rules is very difficult. So CMS will be taking over this property from Atlantic Pacific in the next 30 days, which we're excited. Will Henderson is here for that. And, of course, that will be nice because CMS also is doing Chalmers, and they'll be doing Rosewood for the initial management of, and lease up. And so we're excited to have it unified. There's good synergy. So,
any other questions? I was looking at that the picture before this one, and they have the Rocky Mountains behind our deal.
Look at that.
That one?
Yeah, look at that.
No, I might as well before then.
Oh, the right near the clinic?
Yeah. Yeah.
We haven't been on Chalmers for a while.
Now, what's the
amenity
there?
All right. I'll entertain a motion for resolution. Austin's Affordable Housing Corporation number 00205. Do I have a motion?
I so move.
I have a motion by Duncan Hall.
Second.
By Apostolo. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it.
Commissioners, next up are four properties that you'll see come up back on the HACA agenda when we turn back to that agenda. That'll wrap us up for today. First item is resolution number 00206, and Ms. Schwertner is coming forward to brief on these. Right, Suzanne and Bill, you're coming up too?
Thanks,
Ron. Ron's going to brief too? Great.
No, I got it.
Item number, yep, authorizing Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to execute any and all documents or take other action necessary or desirable to facilitate the acquisition of Davenport Place. Ron?
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff guests. A couple of things. If you can't hear me or I'm too loud, just please interrupt so I know to adjust whatever I need to adjust. I apologize again for being remote, but I guess that's the time we live in. I was accidentally, unbeknownst to me, exposed yesterday, so out of abundance of caution, I'll do this remotely. And lastly, I just want to thank all Commissioners, Mr. Gerber and staff. Apologize for a number of deals that we have coming for you in June in May with the lack of the June board meeting. We needed to get these in now so we can safely, should they be approved, that we get them closed prior to the July board meeting, which is most of these will happen. You know, all of them will be closed prior to the July board meeting. So thank you for your patience and understanding on all of that. So I guess let's start with resolution 206. And that is the asking you all for the approval of the purchase of the Davenport Place Apartments. As you see on the map, it's located on 13301 Dessau Road, which is just north of several assets we have. Harris Branch Senior, which is at the intersection of Palmer and Dessau. Also, the newly purchased Lucent properties is just to the south of that intersection. And then obviously, to the west at Palmer and Dessau is our Tech Ridge and Center Ridge property. So we have several assets in this area, and directly across the street is one of our new constructions plays a big role in what we do. And that's the the bridge at Harris Ridge, which is directly across the street as you see on your map. Several assets in the area. This property, should we approve it today, will be changed to the Bridge at Davenport Place. It was built in 2022, this year, and it's still going through lease up. It's 236 units as of this morning. It was right at about 70% occupied. They're averaging 10 to 12 leases a week, which is very, very strong. Traffic is very, very aggressive there. The purchase price on this is $62,250,000, and we're purchasing this with our partners, Belveron Corporation. I believe this will be our ninth deal together with them, and we're very excited to have them as a partner. as we've mentioned earlier, they are committed to do a minimum of 10% of affordable units that will be restricted to 60% of AMI, and the balance will, 40% will be at 80% AMI. We're currently going monitoring leases and very, very involved in the current lease up of these units. So this will be managed by AMP. We're very excited about that. Nice little quiet property. Amenities are a little different. It's got a lazy river through it. I think Commissioners Carrington and Commissioner Bailey were able to tour this with us. It's a little light on a couple of the things. The playground is a little shallow. The dog park is not, needs to be a little improved. They didn't spend a lot of money on some of those things or didn't make it look as pretty as we would like it. So Belveron is committed $500,000 toward the amenity package and to the improvements outside, which is really neat. It'll be fun. We're going to do some cool things with that. I also wanted to share that this will be a bridge loan, and which is a temporary loan to close the transaction. Once this is closed, we will then go to permanent financing, and this property will come back to you again to approve the permanent loan. It's currently in lease up, and so we in this particular case, you can't get agency debt until we get final COs and we're more stable. Additionally, we're seeing competition that we're fighting with closing at a much rapid, quicker pace. And when we do a Freddie or Fannie Mae loan, which we talk about, which we consider agency debt, it takes a little bit of time. And so using these bridge tools allows us to be competitive in the market with who we're bidding against and gives us the speed and the ability to close and compete. So that's why we're doing this bridge loan. And once again, this will come back to you. It's 112 one-bedroom, one-baths, 122 bedroom, two-baths. And we have 4 3-bedroom, two-baths. So it's not a large four-bedroom project, but you'll see on the next property that that's going to be more you know, more than enough to balance our portfolio, and that's what we look to. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have on this deal and look forward to your approval here.
Commissioners?
Yes, one question, Ron. Mm-hmm. Again, this is just a new property built in 2022. Who was the original developer, and why are they selling so fast to us?
So the original developer is a group called, I think you probably are familiar with Veritas, which is more of a capital investment company, but they do have a multifamily arm. They're called Veritas Equity Partners. They're out of Dallas. I think what you're seeing is they're doing some shifting. You know, they don't have a lot of assets here in Austin. And also, you know, they're merchant builders. And what that means is when you have a merchant type builder that's doing this, it's basically we build it, we lease it, and we sell it. And they sell it for a quick profit. And that's kind of what they're doing here is it's happened over the last year because prices have escalated, rents have escalated. So they're able to get their investors paid off a lot quicker, make higher returns. But it's not a bad thing for us because it gets us into a brand new property and gets us in the control of the in the early phases of it. Which we're doing now. So that's the story there. It's more of a merchant type builder is why they're flipping it. But this, it's not uncommon in this market to see that happen because of the price escalations.
That happening a lot in this area right now.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
That's happening quite a bit in
yes, ma'am.
This
yes,
area.
Sir. It is. And in all areas, and this area is really rapidly growing. You've got tremendous amount of, tech expansion here up and down Dessau Road. You're very close to Applied Materials. You're very, you know, close to Samsung. And as we were touring, we got a good taste of what the who are really coming into these properties, and a lot of them are tech-oriented people. We don't have a lot of families, but we do have the advantage of being almost walking distance, I think, to Dessau Elementary School or Middle School. So that's close by. So we'll do some things on the community engagement front to help change some of that. But this is more of a tech-oriented property, unlike some unlike the next one you'll see, which is more family oriented. But anyway, that's the story on this one.
And Ron, with Bill, with you here, you mind stepping up for a second? It's not uncommon for development companies. I'm sorry, Will's not here. You know, the whole build, fill, and sell it strategy is alive and well.
That's correct. I mean, there's a distinct category of developers who use that as their business model rather than long-term ownership and collecting fees. And particularly, not every developer has a management wing also, so they can't really have long-term ownership. I think they prefer to just focus on the collecting they can at that point, especially when.
And our partners are a little bit of a hybrid. I mean, we have folks who would gladly build, fill, and sell it to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have some of those. And we buy. We just did with Atlantic Pacific. Is that fair to say, Ron? I mean, they built it for us. We filled it together.
Yes. Once their guarantees have burned off, which they're now no more, they're not responsible for the debt. They typically exit. Yeah, they were not long term partners. They were build. Guaranteed to stabilization and then walk away. That's correct.
Whereas with Carlton, we're seeing them as spot. They have the ability to do the build, sell, and sell model, mm-hmm. but they also have the ability and I think the desire to stay engaged over the long term. Mm-hmm. And those are, of course, the better partners, the Belvrons, the L&Ms, the
CDTs.
LDG, CDT, others. Yeah, the names you're hearing over and over again.
Yeah.
Those are the long term folks that we're seeing. But in order to bring more properties into our portfolio, we sort of have to, we're scavenging for properties where, the developers built it, filled it, now they're ready to sell it. And this is one that's come available.
And there was another one, I think, in this group today.
There's a couple, yeah.
That was very recent, I think, 21.
But yes, Mr. Bailey had a chance to have the property last week. What'd you think?
Oh, I thought it was... I actually liked it a little bit better than the fancier ones. There was just something about it I liked. Now, one question I did have, in fact, I thought about it when we were out there. There's a transmission shop right above where the apartments. Are there any environmental issues?
Those would have been done through our phase one in due diligence. Nothing's come up. Those would also be investigated through our lender, and so far we're okay. So I have not been made aware of anything there. Now, again, we still are in due diligence, so that is still going on as we speak. But as of right now, that issue has not come up. But that's great, great observation. I'll check on that to double check. But that would prevent us from getting financing if there were any type of environmental issue, and they're pretty strict on looking at those phase one environmentals.
They would have checked on that during building permit.
I assume that was the case, but
the
dealing with developers, you shouldn't assume that.
Correct. Great question.
Okay, that's it. Anything else from anybody? All right, then I'll just entertain a motion for this resolution, the resolution being, yeah, 00206 involving Davenport Place Apartments. Do I have a motion?
I so moved.
Second.
All right, we have a motion by Commissioner Apostolo and a second by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Any further comment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. And the ayes have it.
And Ron, just confirm the name, the renaming of the property would be the Bridge at what?
The Bridge at Davenport Place. We're going to keep the name
and
AMP the Bridge at.
Is going to be the management company. So our long time management company will be overseeing the property.
I'm going to show my age, not AMP.
The AMP, but AMP.
AMP.
Apartment Management Professionals.
I thought we were talking about
the aggressors?
Tech company, AMP.
Sorry. I'm no tech here.
Oh, that's AMD.
Huh?
That's AMD.
AMD.
You're thinking AMD at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used to have those little, when you go into AMP, they'd have those little things where you could get a number. It's really gambling, but they would get by with it. That's why I always like to go lay and pee.
Did you ever see an AMP?
Oh, yeah. They were greenstamps.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Greenstamps.
Greenstamps, and then in Fort Worth, we also had Scotty stamps.
I remember greenstamps, but not the AMP.
The AMP. I think it was originally the Atlantic Tea Company. Atlantic and Pacific. Anyway.
Oh,
that's right. Enough of that.
Item number five is resolution number 00207 by the Board of the House Affordable Housing Corporation, authorizing AHC to execute any all documents, take other actions that are necessary or desirable, facilitate the acquisition of 620 Canyon Creek. Ron Kowal and Suzanne Schwerter.
Thank you again, Mr. Gerber and Commissioners. One of my favorite properties that we've come across. It's a different, if it's a different animal in that it's a little older. It's built in 2002. It's located on FM 620, 9009, between Anderson Mill and 2222 in a fantastic location. It's a very competitive property with multiple people trying to get it. We're purchasing, asking you to approve the purchase of this with our partners again, Belveron Corporation. Lots of neat things about this property. It's extremely spacious. It's got lots of outdoor amenity opportunities and things that where our minds are already wondering, you know, working on the community development side, because of the things that this property has offered to us from the exterior and the amenities from the outdoor staging area. There's a, they call it a beer garden right now, but there's several really neat outdoor venues that you can do many, many things. It's got a beautiful pool, great clubhouse, lots of neat things that we're super excited about. The other thing we're really excited about is that, the unit mix, there's 116 one bedroom, one baths, 108 two twos, but we have 64 three bedroom, two baths and 44 four bedroom, three and a half baths. So they're multi-level, the four bedrooms. So you do have cars, garages that open up to your to the unit, directly into your unit, and then you walk upstairs. But it's a pretty cool floor plan. They're more townhome style, if I would have to explain it to you that way. The purchase price on this for this asset is $111,500,000. We're financing 89. Yep.
Ron, let me stop you right there. Something that you and I talked about. Commissioner, mm-hmm. I want y'all to, I mean, that's a lot of money.
I know. $111 million.
Moving from the $8-9 million deals to over $100 million.
Yeah.
So you're right, and it is. I guess I would just ask you to think of it in a different way as well. You can look at a deal to deal and say this one was 62 and this was 111. But if you look at the square footage of these units, you've got 44 four bedroom, three and a half baths at 1,780 square feet. And you've got 64 three bedroom, two baths at 1,500 square feet. And even our two bedrooms are 1,260 and the one bedrooms are 850. So the unit sizes are so superior in size compared to some of the other ones. So if you did a price per square foot analysis based on those units, you would find most likely that on a price per square foot basis, this is probably a little cheaper than some of the other deals we're buying at 60 to 80 million or whatever the purchase price is. Yes, it's a high dollar number in terms of purchase price itself, but in a price per square foot, it's actually a pretty fair comp, as compared to the market in general. So, the size of the square of the units really dictate what we like to look at in terms of overpaying or underpaying, along with the underwriting as well. But Commissioner Bailey is right. It is 111 million. We used to buy stuff for seven. It's quite a change over the last 20 years. Just to finish up this again, this is going to be another bridge loan with Berkadia. We will be coming back to you again, once we get to a perm, agency loan. And actually we're accelerating that a little bit quicker now as we've seen some give back in the 10 year. and we've seen these agency loans drop a little bit. We're currently floating around 435 to 450. So that's a great rate, permanent rate. The temporary rates are a little bit higher, so we'll be moving as quickly as we can should we approve all these in to get to a perm closing. So you'll probably see these all back to you probably in July, August, just FYI. This will be called the bridge at Canyon Creek, and 10% of these units minimum will be at 60% AMI. Commissioner Duncan Hall, we've done a lease audit, and this has been occupied for quite some time. It is 100% occupied. But I wanted to tell you the requirement under the state law requires us to do 51% of the units below 80. And that is 166 total units that are technically required to be affordable. Right now, after our lease audit,
How many, 166.
But after our lease audit, we've discovered that we have actually 202 units that fall in the affordable category. And 80 units of those are serving 60% AMI, and 122 units are serving 80% AMI. So that's really refreshing to know, and I've spent a lot of time with Belveron and how we're going to manage those assets, those affordable units moving forward. Just because the law says we have to do 10% doesn't mean we're only going to do 10%. So we've got a great start at doing a deeper dive of affordability. And with the increase in the AMIs, it's allowed us to, as we look at this property deeper, and again, we're still in due diligence, but I feel really good about saying that we're going to preserve a heck of a lot more units at 60 here, especially the threes and fours, where we think we can get some families and some grades. This goes to Vandergriff High School, Four Points Middle School, which is tremendous. So there's some great opportunities here for us to do some outreach. It's a very high opportunity area. Could help Lisa out with her concentration on vouchers as well. So we're super excited about this one in many ways. It's actually one of my favorites that I've seen just because of the potential here and the commitment from Belveron. I wish they were here to share with you, and I would like for them to come sometime to talk about the mission, but they are so behind all of this. So I'm really excited. But anyway, I thought I'd share with you those current affordability rates and how we're going to do our best to maintain those and not dismantle that, and to continue to do above and beyond what we're required to do. With that, I'm happy to answer any other questions.
I guess 1,300 for one bedroom, is that pretty average? I was thinking about the material that Lisa provided us on the current trends, rent trends, and I'm trying to find as I'm talking.
So I can
thought 1,300 is pretty high, but maybe I'm wrong.
I can share with you that.
I'm trying to find what's the average, and
yes, ma'am.
I can't find the chart.
I can share with you that the 60% at 60% AMI one bedroom unit is average rent is 1200. Is AMI is 1242, and then a two bedroom is 1489, and a three bedroom is 1723. So it's quite a distinction between the market side and what those AMIs are.
She indicates the 2023 average rent is $1,659 up from
$1,333.
So
1,300 was the low end.
In the first quarter of 2020, the average rent was $1,335. That was in the first quarter of 2020. Now, years later, to the first quarter of 2022, which is what we're in,
or actually
in the second quarter, it's
$1,659. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, also information back. Yeah, class of real estate and location, and of course, and a myriad of other factors. But these are very high quality units. I mean, we had.
Well, the size is the largest we've seen in things in terms of square footage. I mean, it looks good.
Well, it's a having been there, it's a fancy place.
Yeah. It's scary when you say $111 million, though.
Well, let's touch on that for just a second.
I'm taking a deep breath.
I mean, the cost is pretty dramatic, and this is not the permanent financing for the deal. We're going to have to come back. So, you know, there's a lot of instability in the market, Bill and Ron and Suzanne. So if you're a board member, how do you feel assured? How do you feel like we're protected, not taking excessive risk, given the volatility and given interest rate pressures?
Who is this partner that's providing the bridge loans? I'm not familiar with that concept and how long a bridge loan lasts.
Bridge loan lasts, it could extend out to 6 months or longer. Our purpose of the bridge loan was to, again, convince the seller that we can close in a quick amount of time and not have to deal with a bunch of red tape and delays and everything through Fannie and Freddie, which is more of the governmental agencies that we use for the affordability of the rate. So we will move to perm fairly quickly. These loans are non-recourse loans. No one's going to come back, and you can confirm Bill's there. No one's going to come after you for anything other than the property if things were to go all to hell in a handbasket and we were in trouble. And when we underwrite these, think about, we're underwriting these at a certain return. So we already know based on today's market that there's going to be returns paid. Investors are going to make money. We're going to make money. And the property is going to operate profitably. If something were to downturn, the fact that our tools that we use are with our property tax exemption, I always like to say we can sustain a 75% occupancy and still be able to maintain our bills. We may not be able to make, the money that we projected, but until the market changes, but we'll always be able to sustain. And think about 20 years, we've had assets since 2004, and we've had some bumpy roads, and we've always maintained, never missed a mortgage payment. We've always been able to do those types of things. We've got ample reserves. One thing that Belveron does is they stick away 1 year's worth of mortgage payments in a restricted account. We used to do that for COVID, and it was a requirement under Fannie Freddie. But that now has gone away. But we're continuing. It's kind of like a debt coverage fund. So in case something ever terribly happened again, we have this amount for 12 months that we have money set aside. So we've got a lot of backups that we can do. And then again, it comes to the strength of your partner. You know, can they come to the table if something even worse than that happened? Do they have the ability to step up and honor those guarantees? Remember, they're signing their names on the line, not us. So they have to step into those guarantees. So it's important that we make sure that they have the assets, the liquidity, and the ability to perform and cover those debts in case, for the worst case scenario. So, we do that in our due diligence of our partners early and often. I've been trained for 20 years to always look at worst case scenarios, not best case scenarios. You never bank on what's to come tomorrow. You always look at what today is and what could be the worst case. And I want to say that's why sometimes we walk away from deals because we don't like, the trend that they're trying to push, or we don't like certain things. So I hope that gives you a little bit of comfort. There's always the unpredictability and the uncertainty. No one had expected COVID. Everyone thought we were going to be in a lot of trouble with COVID. We were very fortunate because of the resources the city provided and that we administered and the stability here in Austin. We were able to, to weather that virtually no impact. And the market continues to grow. We see the demand still significant, even worse than it was, you know, 6 to 8 months ago. So,
Ron, let me interrupt just a second. I asked you this when we were out, I think. We're talking about the bridge loan. Mm-hmm. Would it, and I already know the answer, but maybe for the other commissioners, could we save money by using, by putting our own money up as a bridge loan rather than paying a bank interest rate for doing that?
I think that the you know, an $89 million loan versus putting up $89 million and paying all cash, you know, to the investor just doesn't make sense. It's a short-term 60-day, you know, probably 60 to 90-day window. So the minimal amount of interest that we're going to lose there is insignificant. And that's already built into the deal. When we do our sources, uses, and our pro formas, that carry is already built into the actual income expense that we're going to carry for the first time.
And again, the reason we do that is so we can close quicker.
Correct. We're dealing with people that, you know, have big funds that just pay cash, you know, and, you know, that show up with $111 million cashier's check and can close in 30 days. So we have to be competitive that way. I would tend to think that we'll start seeing this trends change a little bit in that as the interest rates were ticking forward and I'm ticking higher. You know, there may be some break in terms of what the seller can demand of us. So I'm hoping moving forward, we won't have to do these bridge loans. They'll give us the 45 to 60 days we need to get through the financing through Fannie Freddie. The other thing is, you know, we looked at this and felt based on the direction the economy was going that we would see some downward swing in Freddie Fannie on the 10-year. And rightly so, I guess we were correct because we've seen a about a 50 basis point drop. You know, we were projecting 475, you know, almost 5% on the perms, and now we're looking at 435 to 450. So I think that was another strategic, well, I guess you can say that was another gamble we decided to take, as well. So we weren't really upset that we had to do the bridge. But it's a very quick execution, very easy. And so it just makes the seller feel much more comfortable.
Any other questions?
One. This commercial mortgage company that we've been dealing with the bridge loans, are they local?
No, ma'am. They're national.
Or are they national?
Yes, Percadia is all over. They're very, very large. They have many divisions of real estate lending, real estate acquisition, real estate brokerage. But their lending division is very, very large. They've got a very good relationship. As you'll see from the next deal, we're doing a bridge loan, but we're using Wells Fargo. So it's the relationships that our partners have with these firms to execute quickly. And that they've built up over years and years and years of working together. We have closed three loans now with Percadia, with Belveron from bridge loan to permanent. So we now have also AHC/the Housing Authority now has a very good working relationship with Percadia, and are very comfortable, you know, working with us as well, just because our execution is so good.
Bill, any thoughts on them? You've in other clients and other work you've done in the space. Percadia is standing out as a.
They're a national lender. We see them in the pool, but we're running the kind of transaction.
Have there been any issues or problems with them?
No.
I've got a couple of Percadia loans on my tax credit.
That's right.
Anything else?
I'm just trying to get some sense of this bit high finance.
Yeah.
By the time you're done today, you will have bought, you know, or authorized the purchase of basically $250 million worth of real estate. I mean, it's a big set of decisions you're making today.
Well, was it? Bunker Hunt used to say $1 billion here, $1 billion there. Pretty soon you have a little bit of money added up. I rode around in the car with old Bunker Hunt all afternoon one time, and he actually gave me a quarter, and I thought, well, it's bad stuff out here about the Hunt, so nice guy. Enough of my stories. Let's entertain a motion for approval of resolution number 00207.
I will move this.
No, wait a minute. That's not the right one.
That's correct.
Is that it?
Thank you, sir. Yep, 207.
207. Yep.
Wait a minute. I thought I saw Davenport written in here somewhere.
It's right above it.
207.
All right. Do I have a motion?
Duncan Hall moves.
Yes. Duncan Hall moves. Second. And Stallo seconds. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. The ayes have it. And the resolution's passed.
Next item, Mr. Chairman, is a presentation discussion possible action on resolution number 00208 by the Board of Directors of Lawson Corporation authorizing AHC to execute any and all documents or to take any other action that would be necessary or desirable to facilitate the acquisition of Griffith South Park. Ron and Suzanne.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Again, staff, thank you. So we're going to switch areas. We're going to move from north to south on you here. This is a property called Griffith South Park, which should we successfully pass this today, will be renamed the Bridge at Monarch Bluffs. Again, using the bridge name. And by the way, Commissioner Duncan Hall was responsible for the bridge. I'm always going to say that. As long as I'm here, I'm going to keep talking about how she came up with the call name, the bridge, because she was bridging affordability, making the bridge to these market rent units to affordable, and she came up with the bridge, and we've used it ever since. So anyway, thank you for that, Commissioner. So this will be called the Bridge at Monarch Bluffs. This will be with our partners, L&M. I think you all remember when they came and presented their first deal with us. This was Evan and Amanda. They're out of New York. They came and presented before you a great company, with very, very good intentions and works very hard on the affordable front. A great partner. We've now done two transactions with them, and they're great to work with. And we're very happy to have them as one of our partners. It was built in 2008. It's 330 units. This has got 36, a little different because it's got studios. So we're going to have 36, or I used to call them efficiencies. I guess the proper word these days is studios, but they're about 550 square feet, but the studios. 136 1-1s, 133 2-2s, and 25 3-bedroom, 2-baths. Purchase price here is $88,500,000. This will be a bridge loan. Again, we'll be using Wells Fargo. This will be our second Wells Fargo bridge loan with L&M. So we're excited to work with them again. They have, again, stepped up and are making the commitment to do 10% of the affordable units that will be restricted at 60% AMI. I thought I would share with you that, again, that the requirement under state law is 165 of these units need to be affordable below 80%. After our lease audit was conducted, we've actually found we have 210 units that have fallen below 80% AMI, with 34 of those units at 60% and 176 of those units below 80%. So that equates to a 16% of the units at 10%, which we were committed to do at least 10. So going into this property, should we get through due diligence and feel good about it and pass it here today, we're already at 16% of the units serving 60% AMI. And L&M has made that commitment to us that we will try to get that to 20. And I think that's not going to be a big effort, because I think the demand is great in this area. If you're familiar, we have multiple assets on South I-35. This is a little further south than the Asher. Just a little bit further south of the South Park Meadows, which is the big shopping center. So we have the Asher down there. We have James at South First. We have several other, off the top of my head, I can't remember. We've got so many of them down south. So we're super excited about this one because we know the market very well. Which one is it, Mike?
Oslo, the old Oslo.
Oh yeah, that's a Philip. I was thinking we have some new developments up there too. So we're really excited. It's very close to the HEB. Lots of employment there. It's just a beautiful property. Well managed. Got some great amenities. Yes, ma'am.
What's the acreage on this? I'm looking at this. I know that can't be right. 15,396 acres.
Well, I think it's. That's in my hesitation, my haste. I think I forgot to put a decimal point. So I think it's 15.96 or something. I don't have the summary in front of me. I left it sitting on my desk, but I think it's like 15 point something. Apologize. 15, that's typo error.
15,000.
Correct.
Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. It's not 15. It's 15 point.
This is a really good buy.
it does have good access to 35. It's very centrally located. We see a lot of people from San Antonio all the way to San Marcos and up north to downtown. We'll be doing the bridge loan here through Wells Fargo. The units are in great shape. We're putting plenty of reserve dollars back inside in capital improvements should we need them. In this particular property, I think we're setting aside $1.7 million in money that will go to capital improvement down the road. So we have that money willing, ready, and able to go and to deploy. Most of that is identified for, down the road is to deal with roofing, should it need be, because that's really your biggest expense is replacing those roofs. But they're in great shape now. We just like to have that money set aside. So we don't have to come back and never have to be shortchanged when we need things for future improvement. Trying to share if there's anything else I could share with you there. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Property, one of the neat amenities right here at the bottom of the site. This road exits, so there's an alternative exit here so that to deal with traffic, but there's a car wash place over here that we drove through. It's kind of a neat amenity. I hadn't seen that in.
Yes, I forgot about that. It's got its own self car wash on the site where you can go and do your. It's got a nice little dog walk thing, part two, and a dog wash. But I like the car wash. That is a first for us. We haven't had that happen.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I think one of the things I also liked about each one of the sites was that there really seemed to be a sense of community. Like when we were looking at the 620. Creek Ranch that was the last one, Canyon Creek. They had these gathering areas that were, they referred to them as beer gardens. We're not going to have a beer garden, but
correct.
But they were the yard and other places where people could gather.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was some intentionality about figuring places for people to come together. There was actually at Canyon Creek, they had actually invested in a. It's like a 2,000-pound ping pong table that they've got. That's a fixture out in this.
2,000 pounds
is it?
Yes, well, yes,
it's,
yes.
It's a concrete ping pong table.
It will not be moved.
Yes.
Yes, not.
But there's some effort to do things that for people to gather and comfortable and.
Now, if they're gathering, can you reserve it for an individual's party group? Something, or is it just?
Yes, ma'am. And there's several of those throughout the property. But yes, we'll go in and we'll get a better feel for how it's being run today, which we kind of know. Yes, they can reserve for individual parties, but we tend to do more gatherings for community events. That's what we're really, really excited about. Again, is that we can do some pretty cool things. With the community, that we're going to try and bring together. We've got good commonality with the assets we have in the area that we'll be able to work with as well. So and I think from a comfort standpoint, we know this area so well by the number of units that we have in and around it, and the need we always, the first question Suzanne and I ask is, are we oversubscribed or are we over, do we have too many units in one specific area? And we looked at this area very hard. And we're finding that the need has grown probably exponentially greater than some of the other areas that we thought were going to grow faster. And I don't know if that's because of people moving further south, closer to San Marcos, San Antonio, New Braunfels. There's some much more employment that has popped up all along that 35 corridor all the way down to 1626. It just seems to be the demand has been great. Asher is 100% occupied, which is just to the north, and our South Park bridge at South Park is also 99.6.
All right, I think we've about got it covered. Got any other questions?
Well, just what are we calling this area? Is it still southeast Austin, or are we more south then?
Well, it's the South Park Meadows area. That property is kind of redefining the area. And then there's little neighborhoods. So, you know, we have Goodnight Ranch, which is off to the southeast. You've got the James, which is, independently been named.
As well?
It's South Congress. South Congress. You've got the Asher, which was previously named.
Yeah.
We kept the bridge at Asher. We've got this will become what, Ron?
This will become the bridge at Monarch Bluff.
Monarch Bluff. So kind of an appropriate name based on the topography, but giving each its own identity. But we would reckon we're trying to adopt the bridge name where we can.
Yeah, no, I understand that, and I appreciate that. I was just trying to figure out, we have so many properties in this area, and I'm saying, well, what am I calling the area? Is it southeast?
I think south, the South Park, South I-35 area.
South, yeah, it's just south.
Because it's way south of...
It's really right across from South Park Meadows.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of right before you get to Onion Creek.
Before you get to Onion Creek. All right. I just didn't know. I mean, we like are taking over the whole area.
There's a
lot there, though.
On the marketing thing, if we call everything the bridge, is that going to confuse people?
No more than calling it, you know, the Marriott. I mean, it's I think we're trying to establish an identification with the brand.
We have our bridge chain.
Well, that's all I know.
We call it chain.
And we have Pathway.
Very chain.
We're a brand. We're trying to create a brand. A brand identity with it.
Yeah.
Foundation Community does similar things. Other property, New Hope Housing does, others do as well. So I think we're trying to establish an identity. Mm-hmm. And you hear, you see Amleys, you see Camdens all over the place. So it's not atypical. So the bridge is ours, and Pathways is ours, mm-hmm. for our more deeply subsidized service-rich housing. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Let's go ahead and get this one out of the way. We're bringing up resolution number 00208 for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Heard the testimony. Any further discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Got a motion from Commissioner Apostolo. A second.
Second.
Commissioner Duncan Hall. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Resolution's passed.
Mr. Chairman, the next item and the final item for AAC is item number 7, which is discussion or approval of resolution 00209 by the Board of Office for the Housing Corporation authorizing AAC to execute any and all documents or to take other actions that's necessary or desirable to facilitate the refinancing of the Haywood Apartments, which consists of multifamily units here in the city of Austin. Ron and Suzanne, you'll walk through that one real quick.
Yes, I will real quick, and I apologize. I kept saying 1626 at the Griffiths, and that was actually the one on I-35, and this is the one that's on 1626. I'm sorry if I confused you. This is a little further south. We've already owned this property, commissioners. You may or may not remember, but in February of 2022, you approved the purchase of this asset called the Haywood. It is now called the Bridge at Haywood. It's 372 units located in South Austin off I-35. We had approved a bridge loan with Bricadia, and now we are ready to roll this into our permanent loan for the life of the property that we'll own it. We're looking probably at a mid-June closing right now. Current rate that we're quoting that will fall somewhere as it will change in the next few days, but we're looking at somewhere between 435 and 450 on a permanent loan debt of 80, an amount not to exceed $86,500,000. The property is currently 99.6% occupied. It's just been very, very tremendous. One thing I just want to highlight is on the larger units that we have over there, two bedroom, two baths, we were trying to get to the 50% below 80 and 10% at 60, we have had to drop our two bedroom, two bath rents as we go forward, depending on the floor plan, anywhere from $700 to $900 per unit. So we're dropping the price that we're getting today on the market side, somewhere between $700 to $900 a unit. And on the one bedrooms, we're reducing rents at a minimum of $100, and the larger one bedrooms, we're dropping those down by about $250 a month. So some substantial discounts to get to the affordability levels we need to get. So I thought I'd share that with you, and that's going very well. It's been very received, very, very happily received, as people are knocking on the door, finding out that they can get an affordable unit out here in this area. So, again, this is something we already own, and all we're going to do is just roll this into our permanent financing.
Almost just identical to what we did at, with Goodrich, just moving it into our permanent.
Exactly. Exactly.
We would ask for your approval of resolution number 209 to authorize the execution and the refinancing of Haywood Apartments.
All right. We've got for the board resolution number 209. Do I have a motion?
I move.
Second. Dr. Holm moves to approve. Second by Commissioner Stallo. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The ayes have it. The resolution is passed.
Mr. Chairman, there's no need for an executive session. All items on the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda dealt with just a motion to adjourn.
And I will do so.
To adjourn the affordable housing.
We want to adjourn both of them or just?
No, just
this one.
All right, we got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. We are adjourned.
And now we go.
Can I just add something? One of my projects, the Ventura Farmer Lane, we bring it to Crossroads Commons. We partnered with Dominion on that. We are having a grand opening on June 29th, and you'll all be getting an email invitation. So I just wanted to tell. And it'll be from Dominion. So. A little far out there, but we would love to have you.
You're providing bus service or what?
I can come pick you up. It's at 9 o'clock in the morning. So
that yeah, well, pick up some.
Commissioners, let's race through these final HACA agenda items. So item number 6 is a presentation discussion possible action on resolution 2751 by the Board of Commissioners with HACA to take the actions necessary and pathways at Goodrich Place to enter an amendment on the ground lease of the authority and the owner of the development and to such actions necessary to convene to carry out this resolution. Basically, you're authorizing and ratifying what happened in the AHC.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've asked this question before. Maybe council can add. Can we just roll these into one resolution?
Yeah, unfortunately, you have different, wearing different hats and deal with different
yeah.
entities, and so it's an unfortunate formality.
Okay.
I understand the logic of that. First, we're approving from the committee.
Who's gonna be, you know, if somebody's not gonna oppose it, who cares?
Yeah, they want to see authorized
the lawyers, we can figure out a way to make things simple. Or we can make them extremely complicated.
Having a subcommittee report to the main body, and now we're with the main body.
And see, I think you can take five committee reports and approve them, send them to the main body.
And of course, in the time we're talking about, we could.
Oh, another way is
figure these things out.
To immediately take the same resolution and approve it on the committee side, and then approve it on the open board.
You know, I'm not going to agree with you on that.
Commissioners.
But we're going to have to do it.
But we're not going to have a philosophical discussion of which is the more appropriate and legal way of doing it, but
respectfully,
we're just now.
Yeah, no,
has it sure been moved? Has this resolution been moved yet?
Not yet, and I'm not quite ready.
I'm ready.
I would ask you where you got your law degree, but every time I've done that in my life, I was wrong. Every time, whoever it was, I told them, where did you get your law degree? And then,
I'm not telling all my secrets.
All right, then we'll entertain a motion.
Okay.
We have a motion for resolution number 02751.
And I happily second it.
We got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it.
Item number 7, Commissioners, is resolution approval of resolution number 2752 to take actions necessary to facilitate the acquisition of the site, lease of the development site to the owner, and anything else necessary for me to carry out the purchase of 620 Canyon Creek.
Now listen, I'm the chairman today, and I'll take advantage of, do what I want to. But I won't. So we'll go ahead and entertain a motion for any discussions on this? I don't like the rules of Roberts either, but I'll entertain a motion for...
Is that editorializing?
Yes. I'll entertain a motion for resolution number 02752.
I so move.
Have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
And
aye. Aye.
And I just also want to make sure that we correct the acreage that's at the bottom of that page so that we're not sitting with 15,000 acres.
Yes, we'll make that clarification.
I'll see this run fast. All right, I'll entertain a motion for item number 8, resolution number 02753. Do I have a motion?
I so move.
Have a motion. Have a second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Okay.
Item 9 is resolution 02754.
All right. The Affordable Housing Corporation, I'll entertain a motion for that resolution.
I'm sorry, this actually be for HACA. Number 9 on the
Board of Housing Authority of the City of Austin.
On Davenport Place.
Right.
Do I have a motion?
Yes. I move approval of resolution 02754.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Second. Resolution passed.
Commissioner, there's no need for an executive session. I'm going to ask Barbara Chen to come up for 30 seconds. Anything you'd like to add? I know by way of finance report, things are good, and I know in July you'll be bringing back to the board fuller discussion of our what we're reporting to the federal government with respect to our finances. Anything you want to highlight to the board real quick?
No, I just got to the commissioners and server. So bad, but I just want to share with you that we finalized this closing the fiscal year 2022. We are preparing to submit the unaudited FDS, which is our agency-wide financial report to HUD through the HUD REACT system. And we plan to probably finalize everything and complete everything within the next 2 or 3 weeks. So it's in the process, including the board package, you see the financial report as March 31st, 2022, which is our last month of our fiscal year end, 2022. So I do prepare to bring a summary, a highlight for our 2022 operating, the result of our financial operating on the financial side in July's meeting. That was going to be based on the submit on all the FDS to her. And also, we are going to kick off our audit, the audit, the testing, all the verification, all the comparison testing, everything with our auditors. Right now, we are scheduling the audit is going to start in the second half of June. We anticipate to close the audit, the preliminary audit, by the end of September. And we are waiting, and also bring the, they are going to, the plan to be here in our October meeting to present the fiscal year 2022 financial report. We propose and present it to you for you to accept the audit 2020, fiscal year 2022's audit. So, we still have a very good year. This is another good, very, very, very good year. But I never think of it the other agency. I have to say that. So we are moving on. Thanks for Ron, AHC's program, and also our we are very, with all the hard working of the staff, and with everybody work so hard. And I think that even with the COVID, that is slow down us, so we are, I believe that we are doing a lot. We have a few things. Just today, Jimmy, that there's some roofing, those type of things we are catching up, but like I say, the agency, the inventory, we should be very, very proud of ourselves, and that's to say that we do have another very, very year. You can see on the financial that you see we have another next part for a couple million dollars to add to our reserve. So, but I'm going to come with in July's meeting. I will come up with a little bit more detail, and then with more highlights, more details, information about our fiscal year 2020.
Any questions? Comments or questions?
Sounds
thank
good.
Thank you, Barbara.
Sounds good.
All right.
Sylvia, is there anything you want to share with the commissioners prior to? Our adjournment. I know you've been working tirelessly on Rosewood. I'm really grateful for Sylvia's leadership. She's doing an awful lot of stuff in that space to get us ready to get to the closing table in late summer. So thank you for everything.
Yeah, there's nothing else to add, commissioners. Commissioner Herbert, as noted, Rosewood definitely takes up the lion's share of my time. So I'll be very, very happy to get that one across the finish line. And maybe take a little vacation
after. last thing I want to share, two lessons I want to share. One is that we are doing, our Chalmers grand opening tomorrow at Chalmers Courts East. I hope all of you will be coming. It'll be wonderful to see everyone there. The breakfast tacos start at 9 a.m. at Chalmers Courts East, and the speeches, unfortunately there are speeches, we'll start at 9:30.
Hey.
Mary is going to Commissioner, I'm so glad that's the speech of them all. But the mayor will be there, and I hope you all will consider yourselves part of the extended host committee. And I confess we're putting a bunch of different things sort of back to back. So Melanie Campbell, who is from CVR, she used to be at San Antonio with Lourdes Castro Ramirez. Anyway, she is. CVR has been doing a lot of our relocation work, and we administered the rent program with CVR. Anyway, fast forward.
Okay.
She's in town, and so a number of folks, about 10 of us from the Haka City Austin Transit Partnership, and some other folks are going to be getting together. Actually, at the Boys and Girls Club, we're having breakfast, an early breakfast at 7:30. So you may see some of us crawling around early at the site, but. For your purposes, things don't start until 9, but a lot of city staff going to be there, a lot of staff from the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs. I believe that Katarina Gonzalez from Governor Abbott's office is going to be there tomorrow as well, so that'll be nice. She actually lives in the apartments just to the north of Chalmers, so she's watched the development happen, has been very interested in affordable housing through the lens of.
Did you tell her that we think ours are nicer than hers?
I did not. No. You can tell her tomorrow.
But not to, that did not come up in my quick conversation with her.
Several HUD officials also.
I don't think Zalika is going to be there, but she sent another. But Michael, some other gentleman, she is sending. But there's a lot of folks who are going to be there, and the tent's being erected now. They're putting out the decorations, so it's going to be a big event. So I hope you all will come. It'll be not dissimilar to what we did when we did the grand opening of Chalmers South, and it's appropriate to celebrate. And then of course afterwards, if you all will just be mindful of, we're going to walk across. We'll be in the courtyard of Chalmers East, but then we're going to walk across to the intersection of Chalmers and 3rd Street, where Chalmers West, where the three properties come together, and we're going to do the groundbreaking there for the Chalmers West site. So that's where the pile of dirt will be, and we'll have the shovels and the hard hats. But the grand opening will be in the courtyard because it's such a lovely spot, and we can accommodate more people more safely. So we decided to do it there. We didn't want to be under power lines and other things. I didn't personally have a problem with the power lines, but other areas in the middle of traffic.
Hundreds of people, is it going to be parking within blocks, or how's that going?
Yeah, we'll
find parking.
Parking's going to be tough. I would recommend you all go to the parking lot, go to the Chalmers South parking lot, and park there and walk across, because the Chalmers East parking is going to be very limited.
There's also going to be some parking reserved at Chalmers East. If you're coming from Chiquan and you turn onto East 3rd, it's the second driveway in, and there will be some reserved parking for
commissioners. That would be that's great. Get reserved
some. Other distinguished guests.
Good. So if you're coming east on Cesar Chavez.
Okay.
So say you're going
east
on Cesar Chavez and you turn left onto Chacon.
Okay.
Go north on Chacon to 3rd Street and make another left on 3rd. And then it's the second driveway on the right. The reason is that our partners at Carlton have had to close the intersection because of utility work there at the intersection of 3rd and Chalmers. So
okay. So if I come south on Chacon.
If you come south, then make a right on 3rd. Correct.
Okay.
That'd be the second driveway. So yeah, so we're excited to have everybody there tomorrow, and that'll be wonderful. I also want to make you aware of something more a personal note. I've asked Sylvia will be in charge while I'm out of pocket May 29th through the through June 17th. I've talked to our chair, and he's given me permission to be out for a little over about 2.5 weeks. So
the chair, this one has.
Is this called vacation?
It's called vacation. So after.
Just wanted to find out what the code was.
Yeah. Fabiana, that's a little longer than 2 weeks. I wanted to make sure you all know Sylvia's here and will be in charge, and the team will be here. And it's kind of like I joke about this episode of The Simpsons years ago, where there was when Homer goes out on leave, and he worked at a nuclear power plant, and the newsletter for the power plant is put out, and he's out for 2 months, and there's like a productivity at the power plant. You know, and the arrow looks like that, skyrockets during the last 2 months. So my assumption is during those three weeks that we've known, I'm sure that the productivity at HACA will be, equally
that
similar trajectory. But
no pressure, Sylvia.
Right. But there's a lot going on, and we're going to come back and hit the ground, in the summer. We've got some big initiatives that we're going to be undertaking, and we'll update you all when we get to the next meeting. Will be in July, and I hope you all have a good early part of summer. But I'll see most of you. I'll see most of you tomorrow. I won't see you, Commissioner Bailey, but we'll see most of you tomorrow. And it should be a really good special day.
Andrew,
can you
put
that
in Philip Chalmers?
There's
an aerial right there to show.
Yeah.
So
this is Chacon. So this is these are the two medical buildings, the medical and dental clinic. So if you turn on 3rd Street here, and you go, there's an entrance here, don't take that one because of construction. But if you go to the second one, it'll be closed off, but we'll just yell, you're a commissioner, and we'll have parking in here. Yeah.
So it's before you...
This intersection is closed off.
Oh, Jonathan's...
Yeah, it's closed off, so...
Okay, so you got to take your cone, turn up right on the third.
But this space here will almost make like an amphitheater. It's going to be beautiful. And then we'll do the event here. There's a covered porch. Well, you saw the covered porch when you went walking.
Pavilion.
The pavilion last time?
Yeah.
That's where we're doing the event. And then we'll walk through the... to the intersection, and we'll do the groundbreaking for Chalmers West there at that corner. So that's our event for tomorrow. It's kind of exciting. You know, after talking about these developments for so long, it's really remarkable that we've gotten to this place. And thank you all for your encouragement and support and leadership and more big things to come.
What is happening in July? We're having a board meeting.
We are having a board meeting. I know that some members will be out of the city, so it'll be a hybrid board meeting, so that if members would like to participate, we will do, have a video availability. So if folks are out of pocket and want to call in.
That's the 21st, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I definitely will be out.
Yep. But we, again, we'll have the capability to... People, if people want to zoom in.
Yeah, the question is, how do you get the agenda?
Well, we can, the week before, we can, instead of dropping it off at your home, we can FedEx it to you.
FedEx it?
Overnight. Federal Express it to you.
Okay. All right. I'll give you information.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have we adjourned?
Not yet.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to, or I can. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Are you leading or are you?
Well, I second. I don't like Robert's rules. I'd make the motion myself.
I move that we adjourn.
I second.
We had a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. We're adjourned.
We're adjourned at 2:16.